This is Roland Chidiac Connects, a podcast about motivation and inspiration. Ever wonder what drives people to do what they do? Join me as I connect with a variety of people who have great stories to tell about what inspires them, ignites their passions, and leads them to make a difference in their work and the people around them. On the podcast today, I get to talk with my main man, Dave Guymon. Did I say it right?
Nope. I'll accept it.
I want you to educate me.
It's Guymon, almost like a M-U-N sound.
Okay. Awesome. I'm glad that I got to get that fixed. Guymon, Dave Guymon, in Idaho.
In Idaho.
In Idaho, right. Okay, good.
Not Ohio or Iowa. But Idaho. Yeah, frequently confused with one another.
Really?
Yeah, it's kind of a joke around here.
Okay, tell me where that comes from.
I think just similar sounding, similar number of letters, not being on either of the coasts, and so folks who may not be from the middle of the United States of America just confuse the three.
Okay, so tell me though, Idaho is the potato place, right?
Correct. Yes.
Okay, so that's
world famous potatoes.
Right on. And it's true.
It is true, yeah. My wife is from a very small town in southeastern Idaho, which is the russet capital of the world.
Oh, that russet is so cool.
Yeah, russet's a type of potato. For those of you that aren't abreast of potatoes, there are many different types, and russets are my favorite.
Okay. It's good to know.
Yeah. If you eat a baked potato, you're likely eating a russet potato.
You heard it here, folks. So Dave, I want to let whoever's listening to this know how you and I know each other. Okay. So many, many years ago, and the reason why I say many years ago is because before I moved homes, so the home I'm living in now, it's kind of like my benchmark for my life, where I lived when I did certain things. So
yeah,
the home I'm living in now, I've been in this home for 4 years now. And then before that, I remember having a hangout with you and, this always happens when names...
Carol McLaughlin.
Yes, we had a hangout. The three of us had a hangout together. But before it was you, me, and Carol, it was you, me, and Holly Clark.
Oh,
remember
yeah.
That one?
Yep. I do.
Okay, so that was at my old house. So I've known you for like at least 5 years, and I've never met you face to face. It's always been social media, Twitter, then Facebook, also Instagram. And I remember when we had that hangout a long time ago, you know, we talked ed tech, we talked pedagogy. It was pretty cool, actually. It was neat to have you and one or two other people from like around North America, I guess, just chatting. So that was really cool for me. And from that time, I've kind of followed you and interacted with you on social media. And one of the cool things about you, in my opinion, is that not only are you into like ed tech and pedagogy and things of that nature, but you also have a great sense of humor. So you're one of these guys. You're one of these guys that always finds a way to crack a joke no matter what's going on. Would you agree with that?
I suppose so. Yeah, it's more of a survival mechanism than anything, and I'll take it. I embrace it.
Well, it serves you well.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome. So tell us, Dave, about the work that you're... Tell us how you got into education and what you're currently doing in education.
Yeah, I graduated in 2008 with my undergraduate degree, my bachelor's degree in elementary education from BYU, Idaho, and taught elementary school, 3rd and 6th grades, for about 4 years in the Idaho Falls area. And, just kind of started experimenting with ed tech. I didn't even know it was called ed tech at the time, but using different websites and turning a piece of junk TV monitor into an extended, it was kind of my interactive whiteboard at the time because we didn't have anything like that. And I got on Twitter and connected with folks like yourself. And one thing led to another and found that I was really into what the EdTech sphere had to offer and you know, just latched on and started learning and exploring more, just like I'm sure many of the folks listening to the podcast. And that led me to an opportunity to go accept a position in the district that I started my career in as an online middle school teacher, which I jumped at the chance. And while I was there, I enrolled in an online master's program in educational technology, finished that up just a couple years ago, and long story short, have left the classroom and now work in a support role for teachers as an instructional technology coach in a high school in the Boise, Idaho area. And so our high school is the first school in our district to go one-to-one, which I've been planning and preparing for over the last year, and we're about 2 months into our deployment here and having a great time.
Excellent. How do you like working in a high school?
It's different. This is my first foray into a high school setting. I love the staff I work with. The administration couldn't be better. And I connect really well with the students, even though I don't work as directly with them as I do with teachers. So I do feel a bit like a fish out of water in terms of content area. And that I'm definitely not the content expert when I meet with teachers, but we have a really great collegial relationship that I'm allowed to kind of bring my EdTech background to the table and marry that with the classroom teacher's content expertise, and we're doing a lot of fun things, a lot of things out of our comfort zones that may be a bit scary at first, but we're quickly realizing is pretty exciting. And it's really neat to see the transformation that teachers and students have made, even though it's just slight at this point. We're only 2 months in. It's neat to see the wheels start turning in terms of, wow, this technology in my classroom isn't just a novelty. It isn't technology for technology's sake, but it's actually allowing me to access this aspect of my students' thinking, or for the students, this aspect of my voice that I otherwise didn't really know was there.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. This piece about taking risks is huge, and I think from my experience, when I take a risk, it can be very scary. But also, there's the other side of the risk, the unknown. That it's like, I want to get there. I want to see what's going on the other side. And usually, there's a lot of good learning that comes out of it.
Yeah, and you know, the theme of our year at my high school is risk taking. When our district had made the decision to implement a one-to-one program throughout the district and knew that it would be a multi-year strategy, they essentially asked schools who were interested and willing to be first to go out and apply with the district. And our high school was one of six total schools selected, the only secondary school selected. And out of those six, we were the ones that said we want to be the very first. And so, you know, everyone's watching us and they see the things that go well. They see the things that can be improved upon. But our staff is just so stinking courageous. And like I'd mentioned before, administration can't be beat because we're all willing to take risks together and give each other the permission to to accept the consequences of those risks that we take.
When this job opportunity came up in your district or in your area, was it difficult for you to jump into this type of thing and apply to it? Or were you just, as soon as you saw it, you were like, this is for me, I'm going with this?
You know, it's an interesting story. I had, you know, put myself out there to be quite vulnerable with this comment. But I was actually, I originally joined the district in a central office position where I was the digital innovation coordinator, the one responsible for guiding the implementation district-wide of our one-to-one vision. And, you know, we quickly realized that what we wanted to do was much bigger than we had originally envisioned or anticipated. And so the way that I see it is I was the right person to be on the bus, but I was in the wrong seat on the bus, and had a conversation with the superintendent and the director of curriculum who felt the same way. And they said, we definitely want you to be on the bus, but we think your strengths at this point in your career are going to be more of an asset, focusing on an individual skill where you can be boots on the ground rather than here in the district office, kind of being the eyes in the sky. And at first, you know, hearing that, even though I knew it was true, was a hard pill to swallow, but it was such a great opportunity for me to move into this high school and really play to my strengths. And I realize now that once I got over the pride of being given a new assignment, I was able to do what I love to do. And that's working directly with teachers and having opportunities to work with students as much as possible. Using something that I have a passion for, technology and computers, to make good teaching even better.
Mm-hmm. Now, as we're talking about taking risks, and I remembered as you were talking about how your role in the work you're doing, I remembered that you had written a book years ago.
Yeah. And
yeah, tell us about the book. Tell us, I'd love to hear more about, you know, how the book came to be and what's going on with that right now.
Yeah, well, I was really into reading Seth Godin's work at the time, and was finishing a book of his titled Poke the Box. I don't remember exactly how it concluded, but I remember immediately feeling like I needed to write a book. I wanted to write a book. I didn't care to write a book to sell books or to make money or to do this or that. I wanted to write a book because I had some ideas that were interesting to me. They grabbed at me and perhaps could be self-published to be an artifact for my kids and eventual grandchildren. And so right there, I opened up my laptop and I started drafting an outline for this book, which came to be titled, If You Can't Fail, It Doesn't Count. And it's talks a lot about the same stuff we're talking about here, risk-taking. And, you know, I set my alarm each morning to wake up a couple hours early before work and to just go write. And it was during the winter months of a school year while I taught sixth grade. And I would get up and write and you know, didn't really know how to be a writer, but I knew how to enjoy writing, and eventually came to feeling as if I'd communicated what I wanted to write about, and looked into some self-publishing options and found one that allowed me to self-publish and make my book available through Amazon and Barnes & Noble online and other venues. And that was about it. You know, I'm not a marketing expert. I didn't seek out any marketing experts. And so the book's there to purchase. And, you know, I've sold maybe a couple hundred, few hundred over the last, 5 years or so. But it holds a special place, you know, in my heart is just enjoying the process of writing and publishing that book and the joy I had when I got the finished copy and saw the layout and the design and felt the pages in my hand and just knowing that one day when my children get old enough, they'll be able to go out in the garage and find a dust-covered box that has a few copies of it in there with their dad's name on it. Perhaps they'll read it themselves and find some inspiration for the things they're going through at that point in their lives.
Yeah, it's quite the experience. Have you felt the need to write another book since then?
You know, I have, and I've actually began thinking about doing that again recently as a couple weekends ago. It would be entirely different topic than what I wrote about before, and it would have nothing to do with what I do for a living. It wouldn't have anything to do with education. And I've toyed around with the idea, It's just a matter of putting pen to paper or fingers to keyboards at this point.
Can you tell us, like, what it might be about? Or like,
yeah. Over the last year or so, I've made some changes in my life that I think that other folks could relate to. I guess it was about ten months ago. It was New Year's Eve. This past New Year's Eve, I went to a doctor's appointment. I had a doctor tell me that I was quite overweight, and I wasn't there for a doctor to tell me I was overweight. I was there for a respiratory issue I was having, and then I had a few other situations that caused me to kind of look at my health and my fitness and what that was keeping me from being able to do, namely enjoying my time with my family and having energy. And so about 6 months ago, I made the decision to make some serious changes, primarily starting out with diet and moving away from processed foods and sugary drinks to eating more whole foods, which led to getting out and getting more exercise. And now I've really gotten into endurance running, and I'm training to run my first half marathon here in a few weeks. And, what you had mentioned before, my sense of humor that I have to kind of make sense out of different parts of life and the struggle that a lot of people go through, which is kind of the feelings of insecurity in that over health and just being a regular Joe who did some things on my own that may help others to know that if you want to make that change in life, you can enjoy the process, and it is possible, because I've done a lot to get myself in a much better place in terms of my weight, my energy, my sleep, my blood pressure, depression, you name it. And I'm much happier now than I was a year ago or 6 months ago.
You know, I did want to talk about, I did want to get to that, your lifestyle changes, because I wanted to be part of, okay, so I've known of you for many years, followed you on social media. And over that time, it's kind of neat because I've seen you transform, right? So I remember when you started eating healthier, you were taking pictures of the things that you were making and talking about them and things like that. And then getting into the running, I didn't know that it was going to come out by talking to you about what you might want to write. But now that we're talking about that, it's been very inspiring for me to see your pictures and to watch you journey through what you've been doing over the past 6 to 10 months. I think that it's really neat when people wake up one morning and for whatever reason decide that they need to change and they go all in. So what I mean by that is when I see your Twitter feed, when I see your Instagram feed, when I see your Facebook photos, there's a lot of, like, you can tell you're just living a different life now. And it must be so rewarding to see the positives that are coming from it, like your sleep, feeling better in terms of who you are and what you do, and the fact that you've gotten, like you've progressed in your running and in your diet. And so, so I can imagine that at first that took up a lot of your time. I'm guessing it took up a lot of your mental energy. But at this point,
yeah.
Is it now it's just become normal for you to do these things?
For the most part, at first, I came across an article on businessinsider.com that was talking about this nutritional reset called Whole30, which has become quite popular recently. And essentially it's that you cut out a lot of the stuff you normally like to eat for 30 days. You cut out the sugar, you cut out dairy, you cut out dairy. I said dairy. Let's see. Maybe it would be easier to tell you what you don't cut out. So for 30 days, I made all my meals, and they consisted of either fruits, vegetables, meat, or nuts. And the only thing I drank for 3 meals a day for those 30 days was water. And it helped me to kind of flush my system. of, you know, some of the things that was making me not feel so well. And at first, I kid you not, I imagine it was like withdrawals from being on heavy drugs. For the first week and a half or so, I just have the worst headaches. I'd be exhausted. I was irritable, just cold sweats. I imagine it would be what you might experience if you were coming off of an addiction to a heavy drug. But after that, almost like the sun rising, I just felt so much different and had so much energy that I figured there's something to this. I'm going to keep pushing on with this. And I learned how to cook along the way. And so while it was a pretty drastic change, you know, when I decided to make it, when I decided to make the change and eat this way for 30 days, I gave away or threw away so much of the unhealthy food that I had in my house just to hold myself accountable. And there was a lot of mental energy and physical energy just focused on meal planning and cooking and what I was going to eat next and whether or not it would taste good. And now I've got to the point where I still put a lot of energy into that, but it's just kind of become commonplace. And my running now, at first, man, I have a picture of a sidewalk outside of my house. You know, imagine the squares in a sidewalk. I probably ran 8 squares in a sidewalk before I was just exhausted and my legs hurt. And I have a picture of that because now I go out on Saturdays and I run 10 to 15 miles. And that was just 6 months ago. That was in maybe not that long ago, the end of May when I started running. So yeah, it's kind of become automated, but it's there's still a lot of conscientious decision making that goes into it as well.
What kept you going in the first week and a half where you felt like garbage every day with no energy? What kept you going towards sticking to what you were doing and hoping for the best?
I wanted to see if it would work. You know, I was at a point, 29 years old. I'm 29 for a few more months here. But at 29 years old, that I was so just out of shape from going to grad school and going to work and sitting down at work and drinking Dr. Peppers all the time and eating Doritos and what have you, that I knew that going out and walking for 30 minutes a night wasn't going to make that big of a change for me. And I didn't have the energy to go to the gym and lift weights or do the elliptical trainer. So I figured, here's something, 30 days, I can commit to doing something hard for 30 days. And then I had a stupid little saying that said, I didn't come this far to only come this far, right? Mm-hmm. When I got to day 15 or day 19 and wanted to quit, I would think about those 15 or 19 days and be like, man, I just went through hell for 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks. I'm not going to quit now. I want to see what I feel like after 30 days, because that was a goal that I set for myself. So I held myself accountable, and then eventually biology set in and I felt so good and had positive reinforcement from the choices that I'd been making. And I was like, heck no, I wouldn't want anything else. You know, and I want to say too, that I've got a batch of freshly baked chocolate chip cookies that my wife made last night, and I ate three or four of them last night. I still indulge and enjoy it, and I don't feel guilty about it. Right. But generally speaking, I eat well and I exercise well, and I'm happier for it.
Awesome. I'm glad that you could share that with us and that you were willing to share. I mean, it's not always easy, but I think it's important for people to hear. I know it's one of the reasons why I feel, just from like watching your stuff and reading your stuff, it was so cool to actually see it happen. Usually, you know, I see something like this after the fact, but here we have you, and it's like Dave went from being one way and then starting on a new path, and it's been really cool to watch you. So good for you for putting in the time and the effort to make it happen, to put in that commitment. But, you know, I'm not surprised at the commitment, because when I interacted with you many years ago, you had that about you back then, you know? And you're a young dude. Like, if you're 29 now, I was chatting with you when you were 24. So when I think back, to when I was 24, I didn't know anything about anything, and I still don't, but at least now I'm a little bit more advanced in my not knowing anything about anything. So,
hey man, I comment on the daily. I have no idea what I'm doing in this situation, whether work or family or whatever. And, you know, just stay humble, I suppose.
And go with the flow, right?
Yeah. Enjoy the process, whatever it is. Don't feel like you have to be the expert. Cause
that's so cool.
Neither of us are going to be.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay. So we talked about what you do. We talked about the book and how it came to be, and then your newfound journey with respect to running, eating healthy, feeling good about yourself. I know you're a big family man. I know that you have a wife and a child, and I believe you have a child coming. Am I right?
Yeah, I believe we start the third trimester tomorrow. So the end of January, a few days after my 30th birthday, we'll welcome a second little girl into our family.
Right on. So how pumped are you about that?
I'm very excited. This pregnancy has flown by very quickly. Maybe it's just because of we've already been through it once before, or maybe it's because, you know, work keeps me busy. I don't know. But it seems like it's just flying by, and now we're going into the holidays, and that day when I get to meet this little girl is going to be here before I know it, and I cannot wait.
Awesome. Well, I'm looking forward to seeing those pictures. It's going to be good stuff.
You know, I get really excited. You and I follow each other on Instagram, and I absolutely love seeing the things you do with your boy, and want to be a father for my girls like you are to your boys.
Well, I appreciate that. It's not easy, and what I should be doing is posting pictures of all the frustrating moments in time. But what people are getting are all the half decent stuff. But I mean, it's a lot of fun. I was joking with one of the other dads yesterday morning. My one son had hockey practice at 7 a.m. So that means I'd be up at 6 a.m. And we're on the ice, and I'm looking at the other dad, and I'm like, how tired are you? And he says, I'm tired, but I mean, you know, this is good stuff. Like, we're out here on the ice with our kids and other kids, and everybody's learning, everybody's having fun. And it's like, you know, you can sleep anytime, but you can't always be on the ice with your kid at any time. So I was like, yeah, that's a cool perspective. And then the day before that, I was on the ice with my other son, and he's so... My one son's 10, the other one's 6. The 6-year-old is just happy to be on the ice. Like him and all of the other 6-year-olds, it's like kindergarten, right? And so we're all kind of skating around, playing or whatever. And the 10-year-old is a little bit more serious. So they're kind of heavy into, there's that whole social aspect of, you know, I need to do my best because my peers are watching. But they're picking up the skills that they learned when they were 6. So it's really kind of neat. It's a lot of fun. A sense of humor is necessary. Mm-hmm. But aside from that, I can't imagine it any other way. And I'm sure you can't either. We're at the point in the podcast where I like to ask my guest to provide advice to others about motivation and inspiration. And this is the way I like to put it. Let's say you're at work. And, well, you're always dealing with other teachers and stuff. So a teacher comes up to you and says, you know what, Dave, like, I'm totally feeling unmotivated and totally not inspired. I don't even know where to start. What would you say to somebody in that position?
Give them a hug. Give them a high five. Give them a hug.
So you'd start with a hug?
Yeah. You know.
And then where would you go from there?
Then I would ask them to talk to me about their concerns, and I would genuinely listen to them. I would ask them to talk without having an agenda of my own, and then start identifying the wins, the things that are going well, even if they're just minute, microscopic successes. Because I've found out the hard way and continue to learn that the best way, the quickest way, to make improvements, whether it's professionally, personally, athletically, whatever that is to focus on the things that are going well and to build on those. And it's when we turn our attention to the things that we could be doing better or differently that we start to feel the weight.
Well, thank you for that. Nobody has ever answered the question by saying that they would hug the individual first.
Well, put yourself in the situation. If you went to someone and opened yourself up became vulnerable, and in more or less words, asked them for help, what would you want them to do?
Well, you know? Okay. Yeah, no, I hear you. And I don't get me wrong. I think it's great.
Yeah.
I think that when you were saying it, I was visualizing it. And that's what happens a lot of the time. Like, so when I'm at schools and I see one person struggling and somebody else is there trying to assist or comfort, there is that human contact, right? That
yeah.
doesn't come out when you're asking a question. Now, I have to admit, I'm not a hugger. So,
if we ever meet, I'm gonna give you the biggest hug you've ever had.
Okay, well, in that situation,
I'm gonna totally invade your personal space and give you a hug that goes on awkwardly long.
But you see, Dave, that's what I would expect from you anyway. So the fact that you say that doesn't surprise me or scare me. And there are some people that will give me a giant hugs because that's just the way that they are. And I appreciate that. But for one of these things where we're just in the hallway chatting, you want to give me a hug, I might look at you and be like, yeah, you know I'm not into this, so we're not going to go there. But
it could be figurative. Just you know, open up and show compassion towards the person who is confiding in me.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And yeah, and like I said, I'm not criticizing. It's not negative. It's just really cool that of all the people I've spoken to, you're the first person to have just come out and said that, like really meeting someone right at that time where they're at in a very human way. That's all I'm saying. It's kind of neat.
Yeah.
But I do appreciate you sharing your words of wisdom, because now it's part of the life of this podcast. It's part of, you know, somebody's not motivated or somebody's not inspired, or even if they are, they can hear what you've said and they can reflect on it and they can think about, you know, how they do things. And if what you've said matches with any of the things they do, or, you know, they're thinking of finding new things to get them going, and what you've said can help with that. So I truly do appreciate that. And I appreciate your time meeting with me. I've got this running list of people. It just keeps getting bigger, bigger, and bigger of the people that I would love to chat with about this stuff. And it's really cool that I'm still doing it, because I started in August before school started. And yeah. I remember in August, I was gung-ho, right? And then school started. And I remember thinking, uh-oh, my whole life's going to change like it does every September. Things twist and turn because you have commitments. You've got all kinds of stuff happening at work. So it's still going, which is really neat. And I believe you're the 18th or the 19th person I've spoken to. So you're still there in the top 20. I like that.
Hey, all right.
So listen, I want you to enjoy the rest of your evening. And,
oh, I will.
I know you will. I can hear your family behind you, and I'm sure they're just ready to invade your space and hang out with you some more. And you're a couple of hours behind me, so you still have some evening. Me, I'm going to be hitting the sack soon, because it's in Canada, today's Thanksgiving Monday, so we didn't have work today. So I'll be back at it.
All right.
Yeah, so I just stuffed myself with turkey for the past 2 days. I'm going to need to get back to normal eating habits starting tomorrow.
Do you know what we call Canadian Thanksgiving Monday here in the United States?
Just a regular Monday?
We call Columbus Day.
Oh, it's
Columbus
for real?
Day here. Yeah, it's Columbus Day here.
Did you guys get
I don't know
the
if
day
that
off?
Happens. No.
Oh.
Not schools, at least. Yeah, it's Columbus Day here. I don't know if that holds much significance to anybody, but there's a little holiday connection crossing the border there.
Right on. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Thanks for sharing it.
Yeah. And you know what? Come across the border here next month and enjoy an American Thanksgiving.
I would love to do that. That's something I've never done, but I would love to.
Come down to Idaho. We will make you the best mashed potatoes you've ever eaten.
You know what? Don't even. Because if I'm in, I'll be knocking at your door.
Yeah. You are more than welcome anytime, buddy.
Thanks, Dave. Have a good one.
Hey, you too. Bye.